Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast is part of the Podbelly Network. Please visit podbelly.com to see a complete listing of all of our other shows.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, eh?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Polly, and their dog Ninja.
Hey there, this is Diane.
And this is Kelly from the History Goes Bump podcast.
You have the chance of a lifetime to join us for a ghost hunt and a live show. And we're going to be doing it with one of your other favorite podcasts,
Hillbilly Horror Stories.
September 17th and 18th, we'll be doing a ghost hunt at the St. Augustine Lighthouse. We'll have a couple of special guests joining us as well for that.
And on Saturday the 18th, we'll be having a live show.
And during that live event, Kelly, we're going to be sharing about some Victorian houses that are haunted here in Central Florida.
Looking forward to it.
There'll be a meet and greet, a Q&A. It's going to be a great time. You do not want to miss this. For more information, go to historyghostbump.com and click on the St. Augustine Hunt tab, and you'll find out how you can get tickets to both.
Better do it soon, though. There's very few tickets left. See you there.
Hey, guys. Welcome to episode 267 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we have a unique show tonight.
Okay.
Obviously, a bunch of stuff that's going on right now. So we want to thank all of our military, civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Big prayers out to any of our forces that are in Afghanistan. It's been a horrible week with 13 deaths of our Marines. I've watched some interviews with some of their parents, and it's just...
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. So just all of you out there, if you've got to deal with this, be safe. I want to give a special shout out to Daniel Newcomer. Him and Tiffany, his wife, are listeners of the show, and they were supposed to be coming and having fun next month to the show we're doing down in St. Augustine with Diana Kelly from History Goes Bump. But unfortunately, Daniel has been called to go over to Afghanistan. And I feel for their family just because I guess we're a little closer to their situation. But we just want you guys to know that we're thinking about you.
Yeah, we're praying for you guys, and our condolences to all the fallen soldiers' families and everything. It's just, like I said, it's very heartbreaking. And all we can do is pray and just, you know, pray that they get home and nothing else happens, which, you know, we can't predict the future, of course. But anyway, we have you all in our prayers, and we thank you for fighting for us and for being our angels on earth. We love you all.
Absolutely. Be safe out there and bring our people home.
Yeah.
It's a tough time for a lot of people right now. There's a lot of stuff going on, everything from COVID to that to got the hurricane.
No, that's another thing that's we need to talk about. Yeah.
Right now in the panhandle down there.
Yeah.
So, our thoughts and prayers are out to anybody who is in the path of Hurricane Ida.
Right yeah. Now. God bless you guys. We're praying for y'all and hope it goes and comes quick. Just get out of there and, just try to be safe if y'all stayed.
So if you're struggling with stuff that's going on right now, maybe you're in the path of Ida and it's you're just worried about things are going to go on and you just want to talk to somebody, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
The group is there. Just use these things to your advantage. But above everything, just do not feel like that your concerns are a bother to somebody else because they're not.
No, absolutely not. Your concerns are always valid. And, please reach out to us. We all need somebody to talk to. And, like Jerry said, you can reach out to the group or call Jerry and I any time of the day or night that you want to. Also, if you just want to call the 800 number, you can do that at 273-8255. You can text them at 741-741, but you guys are not alone. We're here with you.
All right. With all that being said, let's see if we can try to take some people's minds off some stuff for a couple hours. All right.
Sounds good.
All right. On this show, we got some cool stuff, but I want to bring this up. We have a special guest on this show. We always have special guests. But this one I had a really good time with. His name is Sam Baltrusis, and I guarantee that you guys have seen Sam somewhere.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But we'll get into a little bit of that a little bit later before we get into it. But I mean he's been on The Haunting.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually a producer on The Haunting now, which we all know how I feel about that show. But he was on the 100th episode, which is the most watched episode in that show's history.
Isn't that great?
And so really cool. But he's also got a new deal coming up. And some of you have probably seen this breaking, and I posted this a little bit earlier. If anybody follows Dave Schrader, you've probably already seen this. But they've got a big special coming out called The Curse of Lizzie Borden on Discovery Plus on September 10th.
Nice.
Sam is actually part of this. It's funny because this hadn't been released yet when we did this interview a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't even talk about it in the interview.
Uh-huh.
But it's probably the biggest thing he's involved with right now. We didn't even talk about it because I don't think it could be released yet
yeah,
at the time. So
right.
we didn't mention it. But yeah, so this is going to be fun. If you got Discovery Plus, you'll be able to see Sam. But
perfect.
You've seen Sam on a bunch of stuff. We'll get into the interview, but I just want to tell people that it's kind of a big get for us to get it. He's extremely busy. He is an expert on all things Salem, Massachusetts, and that's what a lot of the interview is about. So
yeah, we're very blessed to have him, that's for sure.
We'll get to tonight's story after a quick sponsor. All right, so ever so often, I run across short stories that I kind of put to the side. And I think, we'll either use these for a bonus episode on Patreon or I'll include it in an episode where we do a bunch of smaller stories collectively together. And most of the time, these stories are kind of connected. They might all three be poltergeist stories or they might all three be unsolved murders or past lives. That's a good example. There might be past lives stories or something. Sometimes, though, like tonight, the stories are more just strange and unexplained and that's kind of what I named the episode tonight, Strange and Unexplained.
Hey, and it rhymes.
It kind of don't.
Oh, Strange, Unexplained. Oh. In my head, it did.
So I guess technically this is just my way of saying you're going to get a hodgepodge of different kinds of stories tonight.
Okay.
All right, so we got several cases that we've talked about that have included spontaneous fires breaking out. And I don't mean spontaneous human combustion, not that kind. But fires that just randomly start in a house. It happened in the Sally house.
Mm-hmm.
They had a situation where it broke out in a nursery. There are 28 fires set in a house in Odin, Indiana back in 1940.
Wow.
So we've talked about that, not on the big show, but we talked about it on the one of the Patreon shows. But that was a crazy situation back then. I know Justin Rimbaud on Mysterious Circumstances has done a complete episode on that as well. We talked about 8 fires set at the same time in the Dagg home during the Dagg hunting, which if you were in Louisville, you've heard that live. We've not done the actual show about it, but eventually we'll record that for the show after all the live events. That happened in the 1800s in Canada. So there's been a bunch of more other stories like that, mm-hmm. just these random fires. This story actually has some similarities, but also some things that are definitely set it apart from the other stories we've done. This took place over a 5-year period, from 1958 to 1962 in London, England. The thing that really stands out, though, on this one, is that all of the incidents happened around Easter and no other time.
What a weird time for that to happen.
Right. So Graham and Vera Stringer, they lived in London with their baby son Stephen when all these events started. They started Easter week of 1958. A fire broke out in the living room. A bag of Stephen's toys caught on fire for no apparent reason when the family was sleeping. Luckily, they woke up and were able to come and put the fire out in the living room. Stephen was too young to start the fire, and his parents were asleep, and nobody else was in the house, so...
This is going to be a dumb question. And I know you're going to say, oh, my God.
No such thing as dumb questions. Oh. Only dumb people who ask questions. Go ahead.
I don't even know why I'm going to say it. There were batteries back in the day, right?
Yes, there were batteries. Actually, that's not a dumb question. And to be honest with you, I hadn't thought about it. So I guess, theoretically, if he had a battery-powered toy, mm-hmm. then, yeah, maybe the batteries could start a fire.
Yay for me.
All right. And I said the 40s, but this was actually in the late 50s. But
oh, okay.
I mentioned the 40s for the something else earlier, and it threw me off.
Just a thought.
No, there you go. But I think you'll see as more things come that it's probably less likely. Less likely that, yeah. But if that was the only fire.
Then you might, yay.
Then you could say that might actually be a pretty good deduction. All right. The next year, 1959, on Good Friday, Vera came home from a shopping trip. She finds Graham fighting a second fire in their bedroom. This time it was a box of presents from Vera's mother.
Why does everybody hate holidays for?
But these burst into flames while Stephen and Graham were in the other room.
That is so bizarre.
I'm thinking maybe the, you know, window in the living room is made out of magnifying glass or something.
Well, I mean, what the heck, man? It's just like, you don't want them to have an Easter basket. I know it was just as toys, but still, you know, and then this thing makes the presents catch on fire.
But this was on Good Friday.
Well, yeah. But
so, maybe I mean, it was still Easter.
Oh.
I don't want you to think it's
Easter,
Christmas.
Well, he's getting, well, no, I heard you say that. I thought maybe he was getting like birthday presents or something.
And we'll get into that. That might be a possibility. That's a little bit where this ends up at. So regardless, they got the fire extinguished pretty quickly, but the presents were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's jump to the day after Easter, the following year, 1960. Vera was doing some housework. She smelled something burning in the bedroom. The first two fires were in the living room.
She's like, Mother!
She runs in there, and she finds a vest and a shirt that belonged to Graham on fire in the bedroom. Beside it was a chest of drawers, or Chester drawers, that was badly scorched. So following this event, the family's fire insurance was canceled because of repetitive claims.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder what they filed a claim on. If it didn't do damage to, like, the floor or the carpet where you would have to file a claim. I mean,
I don't know what...
It was a bag of presents. Now, maybe it damaged the floor where they had to have some...
I could have.
The next year, 1961, there was no fire.
What?
But... that doesn't mean that there wasn't an incident. The family said that not once, but twice, they saw a gray column of fluorescent light, their words, The column of light made its way through the apartment. During the time it was moving through the apartment, they could hear phantom footsteps. Closet and cabinet doors would open and close violently. So this was just like all happening at the same time. They later noticed that one of the occasions, a kitchen window had been broken out.
Dang, man, this thing is destructive.
Ninja is loud.
I know, man. He's got his belly full.
They concluded that they had been the victim of a poltergeist, and they named it Larry.
Well, you know what I think they should have named it? Graham.
Graham's the husband. Why
would not Graham. What's the kid's name?
Steven?
Yeah. Seems a lot of things kind of...
Yeah, but he was only like a year old at the time.
Yeah, but it was his present, Easter. Come on now. His toys.
Well, they also concluded...
He may have been a little bitch. He hadn't grown up to let him know yet, for sure.
They also concluded that since there were no fires at this time, that the poltergeist activity was pretty much finished.
You said they named him Larry?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
They would be wrong, though. Poltergeist activity was not finished.
Oh, I was going to say you didn't like that name.
Because the following year in 1962, on Easter, a fire broke out in the living room for the third time.
It's the Easter Bunny.
The fire was more serious this time, though, than the others. The fire department actually had to be called. The flames were put out by the fire department, but a second fire broke out in Steven's room as they were cleaning up the mess from the first fire.
No way.
Luckily, little Steven was not in the room, and there was not much damage. Now, this was the last appearance...
Because he's the cause of it all.
...of Larry to the strange family. You do not know that.
I do know this. I just have a feeling... This is funny that he wasn't in the room when the fire started.
All right, so...
Maybe he opened his presents before... He opened his presents and looked, and he didn't like what he got, so he set him on fire.
He was not in the room. He was in the room with his father when the fire broke out.
But he might... Oh, okay, never mind.
All right, so there's... I'll be honest with you. There's not a ton of information on this case that I could find. But I do have some thoughts. First of all, poltergeist cases usually happen over a period of a few weeks to a few months, sometimes over a year, but that's continuous activity.
Oh, it's not just one time a year. Yeah, that is kind of weird.
So that's extremely years, especially weird over a five-year period, especially. Now, could this be that the husband slash father Graham maybe had some type of trauma associated with Easter, and this could be why... That things were happening around Easter. Maybe it was poltergeist. Maybe he was the issue. And it was happening that way. What about Vera? Could she have had some kind of trauma dealing with Easter? Or was little Stephen, because I couldn't find this, maybe his birthday was somewhere around Easter. Maybe she had a really hard birth. Maybe she almost died during childbirth or something, and it was very traumatic for her. So when his birthday came up, which happened to be around Easter, maybe that's where the trauma came from. And I say that because on that second year, there was a box of presents from her mom. Were the presents for her? Were the presents for Stephen because it was his birthday? Most people don't give presents for Easter.
Well, maybe mom was just jealous because she didn't get that attention when she was a little kid. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
You know, maybe she was like, what mom buy him presents for? I mean, he ain't nobody. I didn't get presents at Easter.
I don't know. I just know that it's all speculation because nobody knows, but there never was an answer to what anybody thought.
Well, Easter is a glorious day. I don't know why all those bad things happened. It's terrible.
I don't know.
Easter Bunny.
But it only happened for 5 years and then it was done.
Yeah, that's weird.
What was the column of light that was going through
that? Yeah, that's true. I don't know what that is. Maybe it was the path the Easter Bunny took.
If you don't get off the Easter Bunny's nuts. All right.
I love the Easter Bunny.
This next story is also from the same time period, but... It's in Long Island, New York, so we're going to cross the pond and go away from Great Britain and back over to the States.
To New York.
Okay. I've actually heard this story a few times on some other podcasts, and I've watched a few YouTube videos on it, and I kept saying I was going to do this at one time or another, and it's never really seemed to fit. So today is the day.
That it fits.
It's going to fit today. We're forced to. February 3rd, 1958, approximately 3:30 p.m., Lucille Herrmann was startled by a succession of popping sounds, like bubble wrap. I'm just kidding.
Well, maybe it's probably what it sounded like.
These popping sounds were coming from throughout the house. She and her two children, which was 13-year-old Lucille and 12-year-old Jimmy, they started to investigate, and they found that in almost every room of the house, there were all kinds of bottles that had spontaneously popped open. For example, there was a shampoo bottle open and pouring all over the floor in the bathroom. In the kitchen, there was an open bottle of bleach. In the cellar, there was an open bottle of liquid starch. And in the bedroom, a bottle of holy water was unstopped.
And nothing.
Other than the holy water, all these bottles had screw-on caps. No corks or push-on tops.
Well, that is crazy.
Also, none of the bottles contained any carbonated or fermentable liquid.
Right. What for the pressure that would make them pop. Okay.
Bingo. We're going to fast forward 3 days later. Six more bottles open, spilling their contents. The next 2 days saw more open bottles. James Herrmann, Lucille's husband, he called the police because, you know, that's what you do.
I mean, what are they going to do about it?
Off.
Yeah. Popping their lids off.
He hates these bottles. So Jay Hughes was the first officer on the scene. It was patrolman Jay Hughes. He starts to question the family when, guess what? The sound of popping bottles came from the bathroom.
Oh, well, that's kind of good then.
So the police department assigns Detective Joseph Tawsey to the case. I bet he was thrilled.
Yeah.
Hey, you're working that popping bottle case. So Detective Tawsey reported that other items were starting to move. He personally saw a porcelain figure float through the air. He also witnessed a sugar bowl rise off of the dining room table and smash against the wall.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he was scared to death, but at least those things were happening. The family didn't look, you know, crazy or something.
On another occasion, when the entire family was actually upstairs, a heavy bookcase overturned and fell over in a room downstairs.
Let's see, that's just getting messy. Now pick all those books up.
You don't know that there was books in it.
Oh, well, I assume it was, since you said it was a bookshelf. I guess I was just assuming there were books.
Mr. Herrmann tried his best to keep his composure. He told about one instance that he had, and this is actually his words. He said, at about 10:30 a.m., I was standing at the doorway of the bathroom. All of a sudden, two bottles, which had been placed on the top of the vanity table, began to move. One moved straight ahead, slowly, while the other spun to the right for a 45-degree angle. The first one fell into the sink. The second one crashed to the floor. Both bottles moved at the exact same time.
Yeah.
So overall, the Herrmanns recorded 68 events that happened in their house. 23 of them involved bottles. Police had all sorts of theories, everything from high-frequency radio waves to sonic booms caused by aircraft that were from nearby JFK Airport.
Okay, that's dumb. Then other people would complain, wouldn't they?
Right. But so they thought that that's what was causing the bottles to pop, though, was just the takeoffs landing.
Mm-hmm.
They even placed a device down in the basement to kind of measure and detect tremors, and nothing showed up on the meters. They checked all the electrical circuits. Nothing faulty was discovered. And after a month, the strange disturbances, everything just stopped.
So it moved on to another house to destroy it.
The case did attract the attention of Parapsychologist Laboratory at Duke University, especially the director, J.B. Ryan. He sent two colleagues down there. one of which was W.G. Rowe, who we've actually talked about a few times on the show. If you remember the Tina Resch,
mm-hmm.
the Columbus poltergeist, where the phone stood, the thing stood straight out, yeah, the cord and all that. He was the one that went down there for that. He's also the one that came up with the term RSPK, which is for psychokinesis. So he actually came up with that term himself and invented. So pretty well known, been around forever. There was also a Dr. J. Gaither Pratt that he was also there. So those two come down there to see what's going on. Here's why they took interest. They had noticed through all the reports that they were reading that all the events only took place when 12-year-old Jimmy was in the house. So they wanted to go down there and check it out, thinking he may be the cause of the poltergeist. Now, the police felt like they might just be childhood pranks. But Roland Pratt felt that Jimmy was the cause, but not purposely, like the investigators thought. They thought that it was definitely paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Detective Talzi, he actually tried to get the boy to confess at one point, and I don't know if he put those lights on his face and all that.
I doubt it.
But he did try to get him to confess. Jimmy never did confess, though. This really didn't make much sense to me because there were several different times when this happened when the whole family was together, like the time when the bookcase fell over. They yeah. were upstairs with right. the police officer.
Well, right. Yeah. Well, that's kind of weird.
So I don't know. I
wonder why they just picked him out of the whole bunch.
I don't know. And then the father, remember there was the part where the father saw the two bottles move in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Jimmy wasn't around then.
Yep. Yep.
So, anyways. Unfortunately, Pratt and Rowe didn't get to observe much because by the time that they had gotten wind of it and got down there, the activity had pretty much just stopped. And Pratt said that he felt like, for sure, that Jimmy was the source of the poltergeist activity no matter what. He just thought he was the source, but they didn't have any way of proving it.
Yeah. Well, you don't be saying that if you hadn't got no proof.
Well, but it's probably a good, you know, thesis based on everything he's got going on. That's usually what happens in these poltergeist cases. He's in the house the whole time. He doesn't have to be in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
He's 12 years old. He's right near that puberty age, and that's when these things typically happen.
Hmm.
So, anyways.
Don't know about that.
This story here is a short one. I actually wrote here that this is the last story, but it's not. I found another one I liked afterwards. It's very short. It was on the news in Michigan. This was a few years ago. It was in Highland, Michigan, to be exact. And the last names were not given because it involves a young couple yeah. and a child. His name was Josh. Her name was Heather. And then he had a 15-month-old daughter named Lily.
Well, I'm glad you didn't mention their names.
I didn't mention their last name.
Mm-hmm.
There could be all kinds of Heather, Joshes, and Lilies running around in Highland, Indiana.
Okay.
Or Highland, Michigan, sorry. See, I'm trying to mix it up.
I know, you're trying to throw them off.
they live in this two-story house that sort of looked like a barn type. It was kind of a... Yeah, now I'm really making it more specific. So if you know a Heather, Josh, and
Jesus,
Lily, they live
John.
In a barn house. Anyways, the main incident involves some footage from a nanny cam. I've seen the footage. It's pretty cool. It would seem that something was always coming to the baby's room and catching the baby's attention.
Mm-hmm.
On one particular night, there is this type of ghostly image that walks past the crib. When it does, the baby obviously sees it. And the baby's kind of, I guess, sitting down or laying down. But the baby stands up and grabs on to the rails of the crib and watches right after the thing passes.
Mm-hmm.
And
is the baby smiling?
You can't tell it's from the back.
Oh.
Heather sees it.
I bet she, oh my gosh, she must have hightailed it in there so fast.
Yeah. Well, Josh, they both see it. Josh sees it. He says that it's in a chill down his spine. And it was one of those that I just really see what I think I just saw.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Heather immediately ran upstairs and she grabbed the baby. Heather said that when the entity apparently came by, It scratched the baby, and it's attacked her as well. She said one morning she felt like someone had put its hands, someone, I guess, or something, had put its hands around her neck and was choking her. So the family invited a group of paranormal investigators to come check the place out. And what they did with some research was found out that there was a previous resident who committed suicide by jumping out the second story window. The family isn't exactly sure why the ghost would be targeting their family, but they were going to have to stay there for a while until they could save up the money to move. And the thing of it is, and I'm not saying this don't happen because, you know, people can get killed from the slightest things if you hit just right or something.
But right.
I don't know who's jumping out of a second story window to commit suicide. A lot of people have jumped out of second story windows and land on their feet and maybe just get a broken bone. And like I said, I'm not saying that it can't happen because I know it can. I just find it odd that somebody jumped out of a second story window to commit suicide.
I find it odd is why she has her baby on the second floor and they're on the first
floor.
They're on the
second floor too.
Oh, you said she ran up the stairs.
Oh, no, I guess you're right. I guess you're right.
So that's not cool.
Well, I guess the bedroom, well, they got a nanny cam.
It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, what do you think is going to happen upstairs?
Because if they're upstairs, say if a fire broke out or something, they can grab the kid, jump out the window. This way they can. They got to go all the way upstairs.
Their bedroom is upstairs also. They were downstairs in the living room. The kid was asleep upstairs.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then. I thought you meant their bedroom was downstairs and the baby was upstairs.
No.
All right, cool. All right. Forgive me.
All right. This is the last one. This one actually, I was going to use this for the police encounter episode we did. And let me say this too, by the way. And I'm sure it's a coincidence. I'm not saying anybody's taken from us or because none of this stuff is ours.
Yeah.
You know, all these stories. But since we've done a couple of these police encounter episodes, I'm seeing them everywhere. I've seen literally, and I'm not talking about old stuff. I'm talking new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen two or three different podcasts done. I've seen two or three YouTube videos. And I saw a story that was in a paranormal magazine or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all been on police encounters, and they've all been since we've done our two episodes.
Well, you know, people might find that interesting. I find it interesting. They probably just...
I just thought it was a coincidence.
Right. And it probably was, but, you know.
Because we've been talking about doing them forever.
Right,
and then we finally did do them, and then all of a sudden, all these other ones are popping up.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think it's cool, because those police ones are pretty interesting.
This was one that I was going to do last month, and I decided to leave it off. And now I said, well, I'm going to go ahead and put it back on. So it takes place in Hawaii in a place called Pali Lookout. One of the things that District 5 Police Department there has to do is they have to lock up the gates at a place called Pali Lookout. It's like a state park.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be a national park, but it's a park nonetheless. There's two different gates that they have to lock in two different locations. So we're going to lock one, drive to the other. Most police officers there apparently do not like to handle this task because it gets very dark at both of these places.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be down for that either.
On this particular night, the job was given to a rookie. She goes up to the first gate. She closes it. She locks it. She gets back in her car, and she starts driving towards the second gate. She's barely gotten any distance at all, and she notices a white figure up ahead. Now, she immediately remembers stories that she's been told by other officers about accidents that they've had after riding past a white figure.
Oh, dang.
As she gets closer, it appears to be a lady in a white dress. She gets close to where this lady is. She starts to roll down her window to make sure that the woman's all right. As soon as she starts to roll the window down, she gets an eerie feeling. She looks in her rearview mirror, and the lady is sitting in the backseat of her car.
No. Oh, my gosh. She got broken right.
This officer said that her grandmother had always told her that if you ever encounter any type of spirit, to stay calm and talk to the spirit.
Oh, good advice.
So she continues to drive towards the other gate. she's having a conversation with the woman in the back seat. At least she's talking.
Mm-hmm.
The lady, the spirit's not doing much talking.
Oh, my God. I wonder what she was saying.
Well, she's asking her if she's okay, but she gets no response. She arrives at the second gate. She gets out of the car and she tells the spirit that she just has to go lock the gate. She's just doing her job and she'll be right back. She gets back in the car. She sees the spirit is still in the back seat looking down. Just like sad mood.
Aw. She just needs a hug.
Upon entering the car, she tells the spirit that she doesn't have anything to offer her. She's sorry. She's just doing her job and she's locking the gates. She tells her that she has to drive through the tunnel, and that's as far as she can actually take her, because then she would be out of her jurisdiction and district if she went any further.
Hmm.
So the whole time, this lady in the back seat is just looking down. She said as she drives through the tunnel, she felt this overwhelming sense of peace. She looked back, and the lady was gone.
Oh, my gosh. I love that story. And look how calm she was. And thank goodness she listened to her grandma.
And that story actually was recorded by the police department there in Hawaii. They recorded that story and gave that to the news to use right around Halloween time. But the police department recorded that story by themselves.
That's very cool. I like that.
Yep,
so we all need to just remember to be cool and calm and...
I'm always cool and calm.
Have a combo. Like, hey, man, how's it been hanging? Yeah. How long have you been roaming the earth for 100 years?
I don't think if you run into a woman spirit, you ask how it's hanging.
Well, her boobs could be hanging pretty low.
All right, we're going to take a short break from our sponsor, and we'll be back to talk about a bunch of stuff. All right. So real quick, before we get into the iTunes and such, just a quick reminder that we have canceled the Galveston show, unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances. We hate that. We're still going to go to Galveston. We're just not going to be having the show. So if anybody's going to be in the area, yeah, we want to say hi, we'll be down there a couple of days.
Yeah, that'd be cool to meet up with some peeps.
Yes, the Dallas show is still on. The Memphis show, if you guys, I want to make sure that you're clear on how the Memphis deal is going to work. We're basically just going to have dinner and tell you a story. It's not going to be set up like a regular show. Like,
you
want to
tell you a story at the dinner table? Dinner table?
Yes.
Like, we're all going to sit at the dinner table eating?
Yes, it is a private dinner.
And you're going to tell a story?
Yeah, I don't even know if we'll have, because there's probably only going to be 10 or so people there.
Yeah.
We're just going to sit down and we'll eat and then we'll tell a story and we'll just have fun. It's literally just going to be sitting at a table having dinner and talking.
Don't that sound amazing?
It does.
I'll be glad.
And the only reason we're charging $10 for that is because we have to pay $100 for the room,
mm-hmm.
for it to be a private room. And yeah. We're just trying to get enough money to pay the room.
Yeah.
So. Other than that, it's just a giant meet and greet.
Yay.
So if you're going to be in Memphis, that Tuesday the 15th, I think is what it mm-hmm. is. It's Tuesday the 12th.
12th, yeah.
Tuesday, October 12th. Come see us. It'd be fun.
For Rizal.
Anyways. And then obviously we got Bobby Mackey still going on. And the closest one, just a couple weeks away, we've got, I think, 6 tickets left. And we've got some tickets for the investigation of the St. Augustine Lighthouse. So we would love for you guys to come out and see us, and let's have some fun, and let's get our ghost on.
Ooh.
On the beach.
Get our ghost on the beach.
On the beach.
Hell yeah.
All right, Tracy, what you got going on over there?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that we attended a beautiful wedding yesterday of our good friends, Andy and Desiree. So happy marriage to you guys.
Yes, I got to actually perform that ceremony.
It was a very touching ceremony. It was very cool. And also, today is my handsome son's birthday. Happy birthday, Joshua. I love you so much. And then I'm going to read you the iTunes. We had The Gickle. I hope I said that right. Mojo Lobster. Beth R. from Green Bay. And Handsome Mike. Thank you guys for your awesome reviews. We appreciate it. And that's about all I got for you, doll.
Yeah, we don't have any new Patreons this week, but just a reminder, if you want to get commercial-free shows, because somebody left a review. saying that they love the show, but they hate, they know we got to make a living, but they hate that there's so many commercials because it really takes them out of their mood.
Sorry.
You know what takes us out of our mood? Not paying our bills. That really takes us out of our mood, so.
But they gave us a very nice review, and right. We appreciate that. Look, we totally get the ads. We understand that totally. But
that's why we made commercial-free ads at the lowest level on Patreon. Mm-hmm. For $1 a month, you can get rid of every single commercial.
Yeah.
So.
But we love you guys so much. Thank you all so much for your nice reviews. They always make me smile. And like I told you, I just look forward to reading them all the time. And we appreciate you all that you take the time out to do that for us.
Absolutely. All right. Are you guys ready to hear Sam Baltrusis?
Sam, I am.
Watch and see. As soon as you hear his voice, if you don't think you know who he is, as soon as you hear his voice, you're going to be like, I know who that is. Because he just has a very distinguishable voice. Yeah. So. All right, guys, let's listen to Sam. Hey, guys, I'm really excited about this one. I've got a very special guest on. I've got Sam Baltrusis. And if you think I know that name from somewhere, you probably do, because you've probably seen him on almost every paranormal show, it seems like, out there, because he's been on Destination America. He's been on the Bio Channel, the Travel Channel, and numerous radio shows. I've listened to him on Dave Schrader's shows, and he's been everywhere because he is the expert when it comes to Salem, Massachusetts. Sam, thanks so much for giving us some time tonight.
Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
So Sam, let's jump in. I mean, you're an author, first and foremost. You've written, I want to say, 11 or 12 books, included Wicked Salem, Ghost Rider, several others. What got you into writing about ghosts for the most part? Because that's what most of your books about. They're real life type hauntings that are factual based as much as it can be. What got you started doing that?
Well, Jerry, I was a journalist for about 20 years before writing books. And so I wrote a story back in 2011 on haunted hotspots in Boston. And it was a huge hit. People loved it. They also loved the fact that I went to all those locations and kind of checked them out and sort of investigated throughout the process. And that turned into my first book deal, which was called Ghosts of Boston. At the time, I was more, I would say, trying to present myself as a skeptic, because I wanted that journalistic credibility that I've had. And I spent years building up that credibility. And when I wrote my first book, you'll see the words like alleged, like the alleged haunting, or like the supposed haunting. And then as I progressed in the more and more experiences I had in the field reporting on the spirits, it's more not seeing alleged, but it's more seeing that it actually, people did encounter these ghosts. So you'll notice sort of a transition from my first book to my 13th book, which is Ghosts of the American Revolution, which is coming out November 1st.
Nice, nice. Obviously, you have a lot of knowledge, especially up in your area. You were on an episode of A Haunting on the Travel Channel. And I've made it clear on this show several times, to me, that is the best paranormal show out there, bar none. And you were on the 100th episode. And that episode is the most watched episode of all time of A Haunting. First of all, what do you think made that episode so popular? If I remember correctly, the episode was Provoking Eagle, Evil, A Cautionary Tale. Tell everybody, if they haven't heard that or seen this episode, a little bit about what that case involved, and why do you think that episode is so popular?
I think it was so popular because first of all, it was Salem, Massachusetts. And to give you some idea, it was the night before Halloween in 2016. I was giving a lecture at a beautiful mansion in Topsfield called Pierce Farm at Witch Hill. And I was giving a lecture, and I ended up getting an attachment that nearly killed me. I think it did so well because there was sort of like the Halloween theme to it. We're at a Halloween party when this happened. And also the fact that it deviated from the typical a haunting formula. So a haunting usually, which got its start with a haunting in Connecticut way back in the day with John Zaffis and Lorraine Warren, and it turned into a series. But it's usually a haunted house, and this was not a haunted house. This was a haunted person. So I think the fact that it was something different, it had the Salem ties, it had the Halloween ties, and it kind of made it an extra special episode.
And it definitely was one that stands out, so I'll give it that. And I've heard you say before, and I've only heard this one other time, Stephen Lancaster, he had an episode of A Haunting that was about Norman the Doll. And he told me that it was very close to what really happened. They didn't take a lot of liberties with the story. They pretty much showed exactly what happened. And I've heard you say that the episode that you were in was pretty much the same way, which doesn't happen a lot when it comes to television, period, no matter what the genre is. So is that the case? Do you feel like that they did it the story justice?
Yeah. As someone who has been on the show and someone who now works as a producer on the show, I have to say it is one of the most factual paranormal shows that I've seen on television. When it comes to my episode of A Haunting, for the most part, it was very accurate. They changed some parts of the narrative. There was one situation where my friend Joni Mahan, who's my current co-host on Paranormal Rewind, comes banging on my door trying to help me. And the reality is she actually messaged me on social media. So there wasn't that interaction. I will say the interaction on the show was pretty scary. And exactly like I said on the messenger was what the character said in the recreation. So the heart of the story was accurate, except for some minor changes for TV. So I was very happy with what they did. And the reason why is because they spent months and months going over the story with me. I talked to producers. They strive for accuracy. And they also strive for historical accuracy because we're talking about actual people. The Richard Crowninshield, who murdered a man, Captain Joseph White, in 1830. So getting those facts correct were extremely important to me.
You mentioned it, so we will cover it now. You're actually a producer for the show now as well.
Yeah, so it's funny how fate works. So I was on the 100th episode. I really connected strongly with the cast and crew and the producers. And I've been friends with other producers on other shows. And it turns out one of my good friends who was a producer on a show I worked on called Most Terrifying Places, her name is Laura Marini, joined A Haunting. She's now the showrunner for the show. She had an opening for an associate producer and asked if I could join the team. And I said, I would love to. It's my favorite show. So I am now working with a great team. And I've been a producer on the show since June 1st.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear it. It's only going to make the show that much better. I appreciate your effort into the show. We got to talk Salem, obviously. And let me ask you, do you ever get tired of talking Salem, honestly?
I'll be honest with you. I go through times where I need a break, a Salem break. I was just back in Salem this past weekend with Ryan Buell from Paranormal States. We did a weekend adventure at some of my favorite locations, including the Hawthorne Hotel and Old Town Hall. So we first went to the USS Salem in Quincy, Mass. And then we spent the Saturday and Sunday at Old Town Hall and the Hawthorne Hotel, where we had a seance. And I fell in love with Salem again. There was something about the city, especially during the off season, that I love. And I went back to some of the old haunts. I was giving tours in Salem for about 10 years and kind of lost the passion. And I'm glad that I refound it and fell in love with the Witch City again.
Well, here's what I want to do for somebody that's an expert in the area. I have never been to Salem. I keep saying that I'm going there next year, but I've said that the last 3 years. It's just so far away from me. But I'm definitely going. So for our listeners that have never been to Salem, give me a few places that are must-see places. Now, I mean, I know there's some other like the Hawthorne that everybody knows about, but give me some that maybe are off the beaten path that you would definitely say you got to check out when you're there, especially from the paranormal side.
Well, I'm the type of person when I give my tours, I actually like to show off the places that aren't on the other tours and then sort of the different places. So the one place that we brought the group this weekend was the House of the Seven Gables. That's where Nathaniel Hawthorne was inspired to write his book, The House of Seven Gables. It's also where Nathaniel Hawthorne's birthplace was moved to. So there's a whole campus of very haunted and very historic houses on this property facing Salem Harbor. And it's absolutely beautiful. The gardens in the summer are just to die for. So it's a little different than what I'm used to, but there's the Witch Trials Memorial, which is right next to that. And that's definitely something that everyone should go to when they're doing Salem. There's also the Howard Street Cemetery, which is on a hill, and that's where Giles Corey was pressed to death over a 2-day period. So a lot of locations that are not usually on the tours that I send people to.
What is your favorite Salem story? If I had to just hold you down and say, tell me one story that just still captivates you to this day, what would that story be?
Well, you know, Jerry, I've been telling the ghost lore of Salem for years as a tour guide. And then the stories that I've had actually the ones that are the most fascinating to me, because some of them actually tie into the stories that I've told. There's one photo that was shot on my tour 2 years ago, and it was in November, of what looks like a lady wearing a blue dress right outside of Rockefeller's, which is on the corner of Washington and Essex Street. And that's a story that we've told over and over again as tour guides of a woman who was pregnant. She was waiting for her lover, who was a sailor, to tell him that she was actually expecting. And according to the legend, he flips and he murders her and buries her in a shallow grave beneath Rockefeller's. There were tunnels beneath the building, or the Daniel Lowe building. And I have a photo of what looks like a woman from the 1800s wearing a blue dress that is inexplicable, and it's terrifying. The lady in the blue dress is something that really interests me. I've also had a face-to-face encounter with a man wearing a hat and red glowing eyes right next to that, which was the bookstore right on Essex Street. I was working at a hotel in Salem, and I'm not going to name the name of the hotel, but I stayed there again this past weekend, and I was working the overnight shift. I heard a loud banging noise. I go outside and I make eye contact with a man wearing a hat and red glowing eyes. And I was just frozen in fear looking at this man. There was like an inhuman watcher looking at me, and I that's something I will never forget. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so scared to spend an overnight in Salem. I'll go there to work, but I won't live there.
There's a lot of speculation on what happened during the witch trials, what caused everybody to get in such an uproar. And I know I've kind of go by the philosophy of the what was it, the fungus in the weed or whatever the situation was that.
Yeah, ergot.
Well, what is your thought on what happened?
So 20 innocent men and women were executed for witchcraft in 1692. One of those was pressed to death, Giles Corey. Something that I found out 2 years ago, Jerry, that shocked the heck out of me. I'm related to the bad guys. So I'm actually related to the Putnam family, who were the major accusers during the Salem witch trials. So you had a group of girls, they were known as the Afflicted Girls, who would accuse innocent men and women of witchcraft. And those people were brought into a trial. And if they pled innocent, they were likely hanged for witchcraft. And if they pled guilty, they were kept in a really horrific dungeon. So those Afflicted Girls were kind of running the town. And I feel like if you look at my family, specifically the Putnams, Ann Putnam Jr. was the daughter of Thomas Putnam, who was the constable. He was like the man who was responsible for the property. I think certain families were targeted because of either family feuds, because of money, because of past misdeeds. And I think some people were accused because they were obvious targets. They were like low-lying fruit, like Bridget Bishop, who was kind of known for wearing lacy garb and kind of sexualized and like did things that defied the status quo. And they called her a witch. So it was a storm of different things that I feel like were responsible for the witch trials. But I think that if you really look at it, it was definitely a hysteria. And my, you know, my cousin, Ann Putnam Jr., was the only one to actually apologize after the witch trials. But for the most part, it was a scourge on the land, and is something that repeats itself over and over again throughout history.
What's your thoughts on the Joshua Ward House?
So the Joshua Ward House actually is now a hotel. And for many years, it was a vacant building that looked very haunted. I remember giving tours about 10 years ago and going up on the property because it was vacant. There was no reason to really be scared. There was no one in there, you know, like walking on the tour and getting scratched on my chest. So I do think that there was something there, especially when it was vacant. They have turned it into what is called the Merchant, which is a kind of like a posh a bed and breakfast in the middle of Salem. And I think that if you ask them, they're going to say, oh, there's no hauntings, but the ghosts don't go anywhere. They're still there. So I do think it's still haunted. I just don't think that because it was a vacant building before, I think it was more active and maybe the spirits went elsewhere. Maybe they went to the bookstore where I saw the shadow man, but yeah, so it was considered the most haunted house in the country for many years because it was vacant and terrifying.
And that actually, you kind of led me right into my next story. I was going to ask you about the bookstore. Is it Wicked Good Books?
Yeah, so Wicked Good Books is really like pretty much every location in Salem has a ghost story associated with it. But Wicked Good Books is where I spotted the man wearing the hat. And it's a shop right on Derby Square, and it is facing Essex Street. So that's the heart of Salem, like the main drag in Salem. You know, do I think it's a haunted bookstore? Yes and no. If you go downstairs, I'm friends with the owners and I've been downstairs many times. People have reported feeling like a choking sensation when they go downstairs. I think that pretty much anywhere you go in Salem, you're going to have a ghost story. And I think the bookstore is no exception.
Do you think Salem is over commercialized or do you think it was bound to happen just with the fascination with the witch trials?
I think that Salem is, when I first wrote my book, Ghost of Salem, I actually didn't want to write it. I'm like, it's so overdone. I was happy writing books on Boston and other locations that have not been in the mainstream, but really there wasn't a lot of ghost books. So my book, Ghost of Salem, actually is still my bestseller. I think that there's the surface of Salem, which is sort of like witchy related stuff and witch shops and weekend witches and, you know, like, and all that. And there's the truth, and the truth is bubbling beneath the surface. And there's a darkness there that you can only get if you spend an extended time in Salem. So I think that there's the commercial Halloween town facade. And then there's the, what's really going on, which is a darkness. There's bloodstains on the land. And if someone's sensitive to the paranormal or sensitive to spirits, you're going to feel that darkness.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to go back to when we did this story about 3 years ago on the Salem witch trials, but the most of the stuff that actually went on, didn't happen right there on those premises. It was a little further up the road in like Old Salem, or am I wrong on that?
Well, so that's another misconception. So the Salem was actually a much larger in 1692. So you had what is modern day Danvers, you had modern day Peabody, modern day Topsfield. So Salem was like Salem town, where it's modern, like where we go to Salem now, that was considered Salem town. Salem Village is where my relatives lived, the Putnams, and that's where Rebecca Nurse lived. So Danvers is where the actual witch hunt took place. So the initial affliction of Betty Paris and Tituba and Abigail Williams and Ann Putnam Jr. happened in what is Danvers. However, a lot did happen in Salem town too. So it was all over really, but the people that were accused did not live in what we consider Salem now, except for there was actually three people, Alice Parker, Ann Putnam, and another person, I forget who, that was also from actual downtown Salem.
It's just amazing how much knowledge you have on this. I can't tell you how many videos I've seen of you on the news or you doing a radio show. It's just like, you just have every, it's just like you couldn't stump you, I don't think, if you tried, if when it comes to anything to do with that area. So it's amazing your amount of knowledge you have there. So that's why I was so fascinated to talk with you, because I knew anything that I had that might be iffy that you would be able to set me straight on. So that's pretty awesome. And you know, it's funny you said this about the book earlier. There are certain things that do in this show that I have not been fascinated with and actually put off doing episodes on. And then after I did the episodes, I've become enthralled because it was so much more fascinating than I thought. And Gettysburg was first, and the Salem witch trials was the other. I was so amazed once I got into all the nuances and all the details of the Salem witch trials and everything that went on. And like you said, the Giles Corys and how all that took place. And I mean, just, he was a ballsy dude, man, to just sit there and just tell somebody, just more weight, keep going. You know, you got to respect that, because that was a time where people were just caving left and right due to the torture that was being put on them. You know, you mentioned, what's her name, Tituba. I mean, she just started letting everything, oh, I did this and I did that. And you know, none of it happened. But I mean, at some point, you just break somebody. And that's what was happening.
Yeah, I think with Tituba specifically, it was coerced testimony. She was one of the first women to be brought in. She found out, like, by pointing her fingers to other people and creating stories, that she got more time. So it was actually very smart of her. And she survived because of it. But she also ended up accusing a lot of other innocent people of witchcraft during that time. But if you look at her testimony, she starts off kind of denying things. And then as it progresses, she starts pointing fingers. So I do feel strongly that Tituba was in self-preservation mode and was creating things to hopefully survive. And guess what? She did. She was the first to be brought in the dungeon and the last to leave, actually.
The 20 that died, is that counting the ones that died due to the harsh weather conditions and stuff, to while they were being held?
There were three people that we know of, but there were every person that was in the dungeon, which was more than 100 people, had lingering effects, health effects, lingering mental effects. There was Lydia Dustin, who died in the dungeon. There was a child, an unborn child of Sarah Good, who was the town beggar woman. She lost her child, and that was considered one of the deaths too. So there were people that died in the dungeons. Also, speaking of the mental strain, so Sarah Good had a daughter named Dorothy, and she was a young child who ended up being brought in for questioning and accusing her own mother of being a witch. They asked her, this your mom have any pet animals? And she's like, well, my mommy has a snake. And they said that was Sarah Good's familiar. Now, Sarah Good would go from door to door begging for food. Actually came from a pretty prominent family, but she was desperate to protect her unborn child and her daughter, Dorothy. And the little girl actually ended up having kind of like a nervous breakdown in the dungeons.
That's sad. Do you ever just look back and say, it's amazing the thought process that went into just, you know, anything goes wrong, well, it's got to be witchcraft. We look at it now and just think, my gosh, how could anybody think some of these things? It's just mind-boggling that anybody could have been that naive or that hooked on their religious beliefs that they would just turn on somebody like they did.
I'm actually not so surprised, because I've seen it happen over and over again throughout history. So history does repeat itself. Coming from a family who were the major accusers, my cousin Ann Putnam Jr. accused 61 people of witchcraft. About 15 of those actually were executed. So she was, in my opinion, the ultimate bad girl during the witch trials. Why did she do it? She would have dreams. So she would dream of Rebecca Nurse being a witch, studying the devil's book. And, you know, she may have been, because I identify as a clairvoyant, and she may have been, had some abilities, but those abilities were completely misused and used to accuse innocent people. Like, for example, like Giles Corey, she actually came up with the idea to press him to death. She had a dream of him being pressed and told her father, Thomas, and Thomas told the magistrates, and that ended up being the way Giles Corey was executed. So, like, my cousin, Ann Putnam Jr., was actually the mastermind of a lot of the horrific things that happened. And imagine a 12-year-old girl coming up with, you know, with ways to kill somebody or to torture somebody. That's exactly what happened.
It's amazing. It's also amazing we covered a half hour and we didn't bring up Corwin one time. So,
George Corwin, the sheriff.
It's hard to believe we could go that far in a Salem conversation and not even get mentioned, but that just shows how much went on there.
So, I think that Sheriff George Corwin he was a bad guy and got a bum rap, but I really think that we've overlooked people like the Putnams and like Reverend Samuel Parris, and have demonized people like Cotton Mather and George Corwin, because George Corwin actually was buried beneath the Joshua Ward House, which I forgot to mention earlier. But yeah, so he should have been brought up, but there's so many other players that should be talked about too.
Sam, I want to say congratulations on the producer gig with The Haunting. I know you were excited about that, and I'm happy for you.
how can everybody keep up with anything that Sam Baltrusis, as far as any new books you got coming out or any television shows you might be working on?
So, Jerry, my website, sambaltrusis.com, has all my upcoming events. I have the Gettysburg Battlefield Bash coming up. My September and October are completely booked. I also have a cruise called the Wicked Salem Cruise coming up in November 2022, and I'd love to see everybody out there. We're going to go and visit some of these haunted locations in Salem, Massachusetts, and also visit Bermuda. And talk about the witch trials in Bermuda as well. So tons of events, a couple of TV shows coming up. So stay tuned.
Awesome, brother. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Have a great night.
Sam is so much fun. You wouldn't know it because I had to do a lot of editing, but we had a lot of connection difficulties on that. I can't tell you how many times it'd be like he was telling a story and then it would just cut out nothing. And then he'd come back and he'd be like, did I drop out? Yeah. Start over again at, and then I had to go back and edit all that out.
That happens, man. That's messed up, but it does happen a lot. So.
And we tried to do video, and I got the very beginning of it video, but before we even got into the stories that was airing, it was starting to cut out, and he thought it would have been because of the video. So we ended up not doing any video, and it still really didn't help.
It's all part of the experience.
Sometimes you're just in a bad spot, you know.
But we appreciate him taking the time out to come and do this interview because he's slammed. Yeah.
He's slammed right now. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. So, anyways, thank you guys so much. Remember, if you want to buy tickets to any of the live events, hillbillyhorrorstories.com, and you can buy merch and stuff there to wear, and you can buy my book. And if you've already bought the book, if you haven't left a review on Amazon, if you could, I would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah. And we just want to say we hope y'all have a blessed week. Continued prayers for our military. And if anybody needs to talk about anything, blow our phone up. We don't mind a bit. We love you guys.
All right. See you guys next week.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty,
and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.